In this episode of Movie Wallahs, we're going to review Ender's Game and The Counselor. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
Hello, it's Yazdi.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello.
We're extremely lucky to have Anders Wright here again.
Hello.
Again.
Not that guy again. He sucked last time. No.
You know what's funny? I forgot about the intro, and you say that, you know, the reading in the back of the airplane or watching in the back of the airplane. I just saw yesterday. Didn't the FCC just took away all the restrictions
for
no more waiting for your flight to start to watch your movie?
That's been a real bone of contention for me because American Airlines for the past like couple of years has moved all of their flight books onto iPads. Mm-hmm. So, like, the pilots are sitting up there in the cockpit playing with their iPads, and the air hostess is coming to me and saying, switch off that thing. I'm like, I'm trying to read a book here, you know. And then I've got nothing to read. I have to read the crappy airline magazine.
SkyMall.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah. And, yeah, Rashmi always comes up with things to buy from
there. Yeah, this is going to be very upsetting for SkyMall, certainly.
It really is. I think they're going to really suffer. Yeah.
It's not sponsored by SkyMall.
Yeah, so yeah, super. I'm super excited about that. But anyway, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Let's remind everyone what your non-podcast life is about.
Yes. Okay, well, professionally speaking, I am the lead film critic for UT San Diego, the daily paper here in San Diego.
Cool. The real McCoy, a real critic on Movie Wallahs. Yes.
We are getting legit, finally.
Well, no, he's legit. We're still faking it.
Yeah, we're still faking it. True, very true.
Awesome.
It's great to have you, of course.
Thank you. I'm so glad
to
be back.
Very nice,
enjoyable.
And, I'm excited to talk about these movies.
Yeah, we have Ender's Game and The Counselor. Now, I know, well, Rashmi and I have seen both.
I've seen both of them, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen Ender's Game.
Okay. So, which one? Where would you like to start?
Let's start with The Counselor. Okay, so I have the intro for that. So what happens when legendary filmmaker Ridley Scott and Pulitzer Prize-winning author Cormac McCarthy from No Country for Old Men join forces? You get the movie The Counselor, starring Michael Fassbender, Penelope Cruz, Cameron Diaz, Javier Bardem, and Brad Pitt. This is actually McCarthy's screenwriting debut, and the film tells the story of what happens when a respected lawyer gets involved in an illegal business deal that spirals out of control. This can only culminate in greatness with all this talent, right? Or does it? So, Yazdi, why don't you go first today?
Okay, so here's The Counselor for you. People talk and talk and talk, then somebody dies a gruesome death, then people talk and talk, and the movie ends. I mean, I usually am not, you know, snarky or reductionist when it comes to movies, but oh man, this movie really rubbed me the wrong way. It's not for me. Sorry.
I don't know that it's for anyone. Really. it's not a very good film, and I think the real problem actually lies not with. It's got a great cast, mm-hmm. and Ridley Scott's work here is it's workmanlike. It's not particularly great, but it is. I mean, Cormac McCarthy is a tremendous writer. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that, but. I think this might have made an interesting novel, perhaps, but it does not make for a good film. It does not. The screenplay is at the very heart of it, and it's the problem that it simply cannot overcome. Yeah,
Joe.
So I'm one of the few people on the planet that have seen this movie twice, and I think given the reviews that it's been getting, I'm probably the only person on the planet that will see this movie twice. So I caught the screening that was put on for the San Diego press, and then Rashmi was away when the screening was on and wanted to catch it, so we went to see it a second time. Yeah, the problem at the heart of the matter of this movie is it is the writing. It's clumsy, and the muddled narrative really had me frustrated for a large part of my first viewing. That said, on second viewing, when some of the plot elements were known to me ahead of seeing many of the scenes, it all fell into a little bit more of a context. So I did actually like it more the second time round. I appreciated some of the stylishness of it. I loved the cast and all the performances. So I didn't hate this movie, but it clearly isn't what it wanted to be. It almost felt like Ridley Scott was trying to do a Coen Brothers movie and failed.
There have been so many quite good films based on McCarthy's books, but they're usually adapted by someone else. They're always adapted by someone else. So I don't know. It just feels like he was dipping his toes into something that he just isn't that good at as yet.
Yeah, not much to add. I mean, I had written down WTF. I mean, there were so many things wrong with this movie. I would just class this as an epic fail of monstrous proportions. This had the promise of being incredible. Writer, director, cast, misery. I couldn't wait for this to be over. And what's with the credits running for almost 10 minutes?
At the end?
No, at the beginning. There was, like, constant credits. It was credit story, credit story, credit story. I was like, when is the film going to start? But I was like, really? I figured we'd be in the middle and there'd still be a credit, you know?
I also found that, there were two things. Number one, there were at least two instances of ridiculous foreshadowing. Characters would talk about something that was going to happen, or do you know about this way to kill someone? Well, now you know somebody's going to die that way. But actually, the largest issue I had was actually the two female characters, played by Cameron Diaz and Penelope Cruz, who, I mean, McCarthy's never been known for writing good females. But in this case, there's a great deal of sex in the movie. People talk about sex all the time. Mm-hmm. But you have these two extremes. Penelope Cruz is really sort of a virginal character, and Cameron Diaz is absolutely at the other side of the spectrum. She's all sexual, insatiably, all the time. It's kind of like a virgin whore dichotomy, and neither of them feels real at all. Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's just the story didn't make sense. I couldn't understand what was going on. I actually looked at my watch at the 40-minute mark and thought, I don't know. I'm really confused, honestly. And I was thinking, why did Joe come again?
Well, it's
like maybe something's coming. I thought, oh, there's going to be something really good's going to happen.
Because, it had a Ferrari in it.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that. But I was thinking something good's going to come, surely, but we're getting closer and closer to the end. I'm thinking, gosh, Joe, you're being really poker-faced. I can't believe you came with me.
I actually think minute by minute the dialogue was pretty good. I mean, he's an exceptional writer. I mean, he probably cannot write a bad piece of dialogue. But it's just so awkward. I mean, everybody is stuck with these monologues. I mean, Javier Bardem, the only thing he does through the entire movie is have these weird monologues where he's talking about things that people in real life don't talk about.
Yeah.
And then Cameron Diaz is stuck with the monologue at the end.
Which was like Yoda was speaking.
She almost makes it work. I mean, everybody is does a very fine job, you know, with the acting here.
Agreed.
Yes. But I think the problem might have been that everybody was too reverential to the script by Cormac McCarthy. I wish they had taken the script and tried to somehow make more sense out of it or try to connect it. I can see what you meant, Anders. It's like a book where you're supposed to piece all the pieces together as you're going. I mean, the lead character doesn't even have a name. He's just called the counselor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it takes you a long time to figure out what he's doing. What is his purpose? How is he related to all of these characters? And while that might be good when you're reading something over a period of a few days, in a movie, it doesn't all stick together.
There's also this convention that's used where you have these fairly well-known actors playing these very, very small parts. And then they show up for 3-4 minutes. And I mean, conventionally, I found myself regularly waiting for them to come back. Dean Norris is in it. There's a couple of other people where you're just like, that's it? That's their scene? This is it? And we're so used to seeing actors we know come in that you know that they're going to take a larger role. I remember Prisoners. You all saw Prisoners.
Yeah.
The one of the biggest problems I had with Prisoners, and I hope I'm not giving anything away to anybody, is the moment that I saw Melissa Leo's character in that. It was like, you can't tell me that that's a small part because it's Melissa Leo.
Right.
Otherwise, she wouldn't be in this movie at all.
Right.
In this case, it's actually exactly the opposite. I'd be like, well, you can't tell me that's a small part because I guess it really was just a small part cast with a really big actor. I mean, it's kind of an interesting look into sort of the way drugs get smuggled from one place to another. But the way these five main characters all kind of intersect and collide with each other just doesn't feel at all realistic.
It just felt forced.
Yeah.
The narrative was confused. And I think that's one of the reasons. I mean, I came out of the movie not feeling annoyed. I just felt like I'd missed something. And I was pretty tired when I watched the original screening. So I thought, you know, maybe I just didn't get it. Because it felt good to watch. Like you say, Yasti, moment by moment, the dialogue was good. The performances were all great. It was really very well assembled and shot.
It's beautifully shot. But I
didn't get the movie, so... You know, when I had the chance to see it again, I was like, you know, maybe it was me. Maybe I missed something here, you know. And I hadn't seen any of the reviews. I didn't look at what the world was saying about it until this morning, actually, when we were preparing for the podcast. I went on Rotten Tomatoes. So I was like, okay, you know, I guess it wasn't me, right? Because sometimes I really think, you know, I missed the point.
I actually felt the same way. It wasn't until I was sitting down and really thinking about the movie and writing about it that I started to come to the conclusion that there's really not very much there. You know, it is also, you know, for a movie that does have these sort of kind of stylish action scenes, it's the dialogue that makes the most sense. And actually, my favorite scene is the one that takes place over the phone with Michael Fassbender sitting in a car talking to the drug lord, Reuben Blades, who has the best monologue of the whole movie.
Yeah.
But it feels almost like an experiment. Like, okay, let's take these great actors. Let's take this legendary director. Let's take this writer who's beyond No Country for Old Men, for which Javier Bardem won his Oscar. You know, he wrote The Road. He wrote All the Pretty Horses. I mean, he's a tremendous writer. And his work, if you read it, is really, really astounding. But part of it is that he's not a very visual writer. Mm. You know, when he barely uses punctuation. There's very little sort of traditional grammar in it. You have to work hard to read his work. Mm-hmm. And that does not necessarily translate into something that is visual in the way the medium of film actually is.
And screenplays are very technical craft. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've done a number of screenwriting classes and, you know, we've done some writing ourselves. And the thing about screenplay writing versus narrative writing is how a screenplay is almost a technical document.
Yeah.
It's got this very rigid structure to it. And I think you do have to hit those beats. You know, as much as we like to see something different, we like to see something new. You know, a movie has a certain cadence to it, a rhythm that this movie just never seems to settle into.
See, but there are people who don't follow that, like Steve McQueen. I mean, we talked about our previous movie.
Right.
None of his movies follow the traditional arc. I mean, neither does 12 Years.
Right, but I think they're exceptional, right? I mean, I think
if you're going to break the rules...
And they understand the screen.
Well, and they're more character pieces, too.
But they're filmmakers, too, right? I mean, this is the difference between them and perhaps the writer here, is that these guys are filmmakers, and even though they don't follow the template, they understand the way that the audience will react.
And I would say, I mean... talking about Steve McQueen, he breaks the rules to a degree, but his movies have a three-act structure. You can see them there. I mean, there is a structure to that in 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
It may not feel as obvious as a lot of films do, but he's working within the larger beats of a story. Cormac McCarthy, I mean... This movie also has a three act structure. It's just that the nature of the narrative and the way he tells the story is so muddled. No, sure it is. I mean, look, it starts out he decides to do the drug deal.
Right.
Then the drug deal goes bad.
Yeah.
Now here comes the climax.
Right.
I mean, it's there. It's just that it's murky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was anyone else irritated with Javier Bardem? I just thought again he's playing a caricature. It was really annoying to me.
It's kind of like the one he did in Bond last year.
Yeah, he was just this weird person dressed up, strange costume.
That's why you hire Javier Bardem, right?
I know, but I was...
I think he was just stuck with having to say so much. I hate to sound repetitive, but it seems so indulgent, the whole screenplay, because everybody has to say something about how they see life. And I'm not talking about just on a day-to-day, like, the life. You know, everybody's talking about, you know, the secret of the universe, according to me, and it gets tiresome after a while.
I agree. And I don't really think it's his fault. I mean, he had to work with what he was given. And I mean, to be honest, he was very refreshing when he was on screen, at least for me. I kind of wanted everyone else to be in the same movie he was in.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and it just felt like there was this whole 10-minute scene on diamonds.
Yes.
And I don't even... Like, what was the relevance of that? I mean, movies. I don't know.
Was I learned it to make, a lot.
Did you? Will you apply it?
There was that didn't come back around at the end.
With the ring.
At the very end, she said, "I'm going to take all my money and put it into diamonds or something."
Oh,
like that.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for clearing that up. Yeah. Makes much less annoying film now.
But again, it's sort of obvious foreshadowing. Yeah. I guess we'd say, yeah.
Okay.
And you know, the other thing is that, and I know I'm in the singular minority. I had a really hard time finishing The Road as a book. Mm-hmm. I had a really hard time. No Country for
Old Men.
Old Men. Thank you. I kept trying to say No Country for Good Men. No Country for Old Men. I didn't have a problem with. But I really, McCarthy needs to see a therapist. I mean, I understand. I mean, he's, you know, all of his everything he writes is very nihilistic. It's all about, you know, we are terrible. We're going to die. You know, we're miserable. I get that, but he seems to really kind of find this affiliation with finding the most horrifyingly gruesome ways of killing people. I mean, look at the Anton Chigurh character in No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
There are some there are two spectacularly jaw-dropping deaths in this movie.
I really liked one of them.
I mean, exactly. I mean, you're torn between disgust and fascination. Between, you know, somebody actually thought this up, that this would be a way to kill somebody. I think it's a plea for help. I really think.
You've not read Blood Meridian, have you? They've been talking about making that. That is one of the most savagely violent books I've ever read. He also, it's interesting though, you know, so many of his books were sort of set in the West or as Westerns, and now just in the last 5 or 6 years with The Road and now with this, it's kind of like he's trying to take that Western aesthetic and put it into a different place. Yeah,
that's a good observation. Okay, let's sum this one up. I'm pretty bored of this one already. Yes. So Joe, why don't you start?
So amazingly, I got more out of it on the second viewing, so I'm going to have to say that if you're going to see it, then see it twice. But
I can't recommend
that anyone sees this at all. No, I mean, I didn't hate it. I'm going to give it a fairly generous 5 out of 10. It's not inept. There are things to admire about the movie, and as a person that likes all movies, I didn't hate the experience of being there. But, you know, it was a head-scratcher and not a movie that I can recommend.
Anders.
I like to award ambition, and it certainly is ambitious, but it just feels as though you have all of these wonderful pieces that do not actually fit together to the same puzzle. Out of 10, let's say 3. Yes.
Oh.
Yasty.
Yeah. Brutal. Yay. Yeah, I think it's a failure. Yeah.
I mean, really, how can you take this embarrassingly good cast and make it amount to so little? You know, I just, for me, it just seems disappointing, because so much promise with this group of people, and you know, and such a hardworking, wonderfully game cast. I mean, people do some really incredible things in this movie, you know, by way of Call of Duty, but it ultimately seemed very wasteful to me. So I'm just disappointed more than anything else. I give it 4 out of 10, and that's a little generous.
What a confusing mess, including Cameron Diaz on the Ferrari. This is awful. I think I'll need some counseling after seeing this movie. 3 out of 10.
Wow. Expectations are always so high for me when I see Ridley Scott's name involved in a project.
Fassbender, Pitt.
Fassbender's actually pretty good.
He's very good.
He's good. I agree.
Yeah. He unravels as good as anybody.
But yes, you know? But he's also playing the straight man to everyone else in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To drive my point home from our 12 Years a Slave discussion, Brad Pitt. He's so good in this. I think he might
be okay.
The best in a parade of really whacked out characters.
Yeah, I wasn't taken.
No? I wasn't taken with him either.
I'm
tired of the long hair.
What was the movie, the gangster movie he made last year? The Andrew Dominik's movie, Killing Them Softly. I loved that movie. I think he's tremendous in that movie. But he also, sometimes he does it here too. He's got all of these lengthy speeches, and he can be a little bit of a mushmouth, where it's hard for him to get that language out.
Mm.
And I certainly felt...
Yeah, no, I do find that with him, yeah.
Yeah, I did not feel as though the language came naturally to him, that the words are so literary in that sense that it doesn't feel like it should be coming out of him.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel natural.
Yeah. But
And I actually thought Penelope Cruz was pretty good, given how little she had.
Yeah. So dull.
No, I like her. I always like her. And I liked her in this as well. But there wasn't much to her character,
right? Yeah, but
right?
The movie's so dark. I mean, the movie this reminded me most of was Seven. And you know, Seven is a far superior movie, but it has that same dark, unrelenting kind of sensibility about it. And, you know, like Gwyneth Paltrow was that little bit of sunshine in Seven, you know.
Oh my God.
She was, you know, Penelope Cruz was kind of the one object of some value, some goodness in the movie.
Do you say that in terms of it being sort of a procedural that it follows? Because I would say less Seven and more, if I'm making those comparisons, more Zodiac.
Yes.
In terms of that. But Zodiac all fits. All the pieces come together. I mean, that's what Prisoners was trying to be as well. Mm-hmm. More like a Zodiac, but I think it eventually...
I like Prisoners. Yeah.
Until the third act when it kind of fell to pieces.
That's what you said, yeah.
I just watched, I just watched a film called Drug War by Johnny Toh, the Hong Kong director. It's the first movie he made in China, and no one knew how it was going to come out, and it's terrific.
Oh. Yes.
As procedurals go, it's a tremendous movie. It's
really?
It's just great.
It's gotten great reviews as well.
I just loved it. It's so sharp and straightforward and well-made and well-put-together, and...
I love that you got another sneaky review in there.
Yeah. Oh, it's
one to add to the list.
It is. It played in San Diego for a week earlier this year. It is playing.
Please don't get Yazzie started.
Yeah,
I'm feeling like Yazzie's gonna the soapbox is arriving.
It is going to play at the Asian Film Festival, which starts.
Oh, good.
I'm there.
Yeah, okay. But it is find it, get it. In my mind, if The Counselor is what you think you want, what you actually want is Drug War.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
Does anyone think that Michael Fassbender is filling the space that Jude Law left behind?
I think he's a far better actor.
Yeah. I know he's I kind of get the sense that...
Physical similarities aside, I don't really draw much commonality between them. I mean, I don't see them as the same person. But
Fassbender has been rising very quickly.
Yeah, I love him.
And it seems to be because he's able to do things like where he is pretty good in The Counselor, where he is tremendous in 12 Years a Slave, and where he can still do a big X-Men movie. He can hold his own in any of those.
Yeah.
And he's working so hard. I mean, he's in everything right now.
What I love is he's just completely fearless.
He will do anything.
There is no limits
to
him.
And he's so easy on the eyes.
That's the future of cinema, I think, where you just...
He's a very, very attractive man.
Very attractive. Even when he was being the rotten person in 12 Years a Slave, I was...
Sorry, Ashley, no one was listening. They were
Anders' boy crush and my man crush. Yeah.
An important point about his craft, and you guys are talking about his physicality.
Yes, craft, whatever.
Yeah, his craft.
And shame is seared in my brain.
Yeah, with a lot of
prosthetic. That was a prosthetic woman.
No, it wasn't.
No one looks like that.
Please, Yazdi,
share
with us something about The Craft.
No, I just love that there's nothing that a director will ask him that he will say no to. And I think that's great.
He's much more than just the pretty face.
Yeah.
Is really what it is. Yeah.
He brings so much to every character. Yeah. I mean, even Prometheus from last year, I love that movie, he was so good in that with a role that inhibited him from being expressive, right? I mean, he was the android, but...
Yeah, he was denied in Shame. He was denied, I think, in Prometheus from a Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, God, so good in that.
I didn't love Prometheus, but he was very, very good in it. But let me ask you a question. Charlize Theron in that movie? She's an android, right?
Well, I think they allude to that.
Yeah.
They don't explicitly say that, but that's the...
When's the next one coming?
They haven't even started filming yet.
Yeah. I'm not sure it'll get a sequel, but I hope it does.
I thought it was green lighted. It made a bunch of money.
Yeah.
I loved it, but anyhow. All right. Let's move on, I guess, in a sci-fi direction with Ender's Game. So who has the intro for that? Yazdi?
Yeah, so Ender's Game is based on the book by Orson Scott Card. And here is the movie adaptation, which shares screenwriting with Gavin Hood, who also directed the movie. Essentially, it's a sci-fi story about the imminent threat to mankind from an alien race and a desperate search to find a person who can protect the planet and lead it against the invasion. A very young, intelligent kid by the name of Ender Higgins is selected to lead fellow humans and save the planet. That's The Ender's Game, which is directed by Gavin Hood, as I said, and stars Harrison Ford, Asa Butterfield from Hugo, I believe, and Hailee Steinfeld from True Grit adaptation of the Coen brothers. I didn't get a chance to see this, but I'm eager to know what you guys thought about
it. Ben Kingsley as well.
Oh, yes. Ben Kingsley, yes.
Was actually, for me, probably the best part of the movie. I liked it okay, I guess. I mean, Ender's Game is a seminal piece of science fiction, despite its young adult roots.
Have you read the book?
Yes, I have. It's been a good long while since
I've read it. It was released in like the mid-80s, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right, like 1985. I probably read it, but it was immediately sort of recognized as being kind of an important little piece of work. Mm-hmm. I feel as though the movie is serviceable. It is very sort of straightforward. It attempts to sort of delve into some moral complications, but it's a little muddy in the way it ends up doing that. In fact, when it tries to get to those deeper truths, the movie really sort of bogs down and kind of moves away from its great strengths. Visually, it's beautiful. So much so that I cannot believe they made this movie in just two dimensions. Especially considering some of the sequences in it. What seems to be, I mean, as I said, it's very straightforward. What the biggest changes from the book, I would say, are that the character of Ender in this film is, I don't know, 11, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. In the book, he's 6 or 7. Mm. And you have this sense of play. It's the idea that children play in ways that are extraordinarily tactical, that adults can't do. And there's no real sense of play in Ender's Game, the film. It's very militaristic from the get-go, the society that all of these people are living in, and almost fascistic in some ways, where the population is being controlled by a level of propaganda that is, it's kind of like Starship Troopers, but not as funny. I mean, I found it to be perfectly fine, but nothing sort of awe-inspiring or necessarily groundbreaking.
So I'll add to the no play with no joy, but straight off I should declare that, you know, I haven't read the book, and I don't think I'm the right demographic for this movie, and rather like the host earlier this year, I think if you're a teen or a tween, you actually may get more out of this. So that's going to taint my review of the movie. I came away feeling like I'd watched Bugsy Malone meets Harry Potter, the space version, and I appreciate what went into the movie, but it's really not my cup of tea, and I'm so sick of aliens coming into Earth and stealing our water. Every alien invasion movie. Right. Not my cup of tea.
If you're a teen or a tween or you're Joe, because I really enjoyed this movie. Again, I watched it very much as a 14-year-old boy. You know, it was a sci-fi movie. It's kind of the thing that I grew up on. And as before the podcast, we were talking about your formative years in terms of movie watching. Well, this was exactly the kind of thing that I lapped up as a teen and as an adult, other than the frustration that this movie wasn't in 3D, because this movie really lent itself to that, I loved the central character. I really enjoyed the whole experience of the movie. It was, you know, I loved how intelligent. I thought the writing was very good. I thought the scenes and the dialogue and this character, how he engineers his way out of situations, was very well done and very well depicted. I haven't read the book,
which shouldn't be necessary.
It's a correction I'm making right now, because I bought the Kindle book and I started reading it immediately. But I really had a blast with this movie. And I think the issue with some of the reviews that I've read about the movie is that there, you know, I did see the morality tale that was kind of emerging towards the end and some of the things that but it all felt a little tacked on, and I think that was probably a lot better explored in the book. So I'm looking forward to kind of understanding that, because I think if I had taken that to be more of a part of the movie, I would have ended up disappointed. Mm-hmm. Instead, I took the movie at face value and saw this, you know, bright kid in these interesting situations, and I really, really had a lot of fun.
One of the things I thought was funny is that, so, you know, part of what's happening is that Ender is being groomed by Colonel Hiram Graff, who's Han Solo back in space, Harrison Ford.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
And one of the things that I found kind of funny, though, is that, you know, they're searching for the greatest tactical mind on Earth, and it doesn't actually matter what Ender does. Harrison Ford is always like, he's a tactical genius. Did you see
that? Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
He is the one.
Yeah. He just looks at the plate.
He clearly had several motivations to be doing that. Yeah. And I didn't. It's. I also primarily took it at face value. I just don't know that it's a movie that's really going to stay with me. That at the end of it, it's the end of it. I mean, the movies, I also came up as a teenager watching sci-fi movies. I mean, the first Terminator resonated with me a great deal.
That.
But in some ways, this also, a movie like The Terminator, which is rated R, has advantages in terms of what it can and can't do. This is a very PG-13 movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that there's necessarily anything wrong with that, but it's definitely made for a younger audience than...
Or Joe.
Yeah, well,
yeah, but I watched it through the eyes of a 14-year-old boy, I enjoyed the heck out of it.
So the thing for me was I just found it so exhausting to watch. And Yaz, you always say this a lot. It was just overcooked. There were so many strange things going on, like the tattoos on Ben Kingsley's face. And I understand they gave us an explanation, but it wasn't good enough for me. Then there's this whole kind of animated dreams that are going on. This very strange relationship between Ender and his sister who's back on Earth. It just, there was so much in it. I couldn't extract what we were supposed to be, what was supposed to carry us through the film, other than Ender is this very genius little boy. It was just too exhausting.
I also, there's a degree at which, at some point where you discover that Ender is having empathy for the alien race that, and that actually felt very tacked on to me.
Mm-hmm.
It feels as though there's sort of an epilogue for the entire thing that is meant to justify the events that have taken place.
Yeah.
And this is sort of what I mean, where it's got this sort of like odd sense of morality that it's trying to justify great violence and the way adults use children for warfare, which is still what we do today. I mean, people we send off to war, not much older than the people in this, but it's not explored or considered as well as I might have liked. That is the part that feels undercooked.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And you know, it does feel like they stuck in it. It's almost like an epilogue in this movie because the story's over. You know, you have the big space battle, and you know, for me, I would have been quite happily to finish up my popcorn and see the credits roll and walk out there. So you then have this extra little thing that they put on at the end, and you know, I think. As I'm reading, I started reading the book a couple of days ago. I bought the book on tape, so I had a couple hours drive. So I'm 2, 3, 4 chapters into it. And already they're alluding to some of those things that they stuck on at the very end of the movie. So maybe it was something that, you know, in the screenplay, they almost wanted to drop. And then they thought, no, we can't really, you know, the fans of the original will kill us if we don't have this element in there.
Yeah.
Is this an action movie? Like, is it one set piece after another? Is that how it's structured?
There are a number of pieces like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Much of it takes place in this sort of training zone where you cannot believe that they didn't shoot it in 3D because it all takes place in zero gravity and this huge, you're like, oh no.
We saw it in IMAX and that was a great experience, but all the way through those scenes in the gravity room or zero gravity room, I was like, why isn't this in 3D? And I never ask for 3D. I hate it. I don't want it. I don't want the glasses. I don't want the experience. But I was all the way through, I was like, oh,
this is a movie I want to see like
convert that movie to 3D. Do it post. I mean, please.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I did like was I loved the footage of Earth from space. I mean, I thought it was as good as Gravity. In fact, I actually thought they'd stolen the same footage at times. I think the technology they used was very good, and it kind of made me as excited as when we saw it in Minority Report all those years ago. I thought that was good, but no, not for me. And I like sci-fi. Okay, I think we're ready to end. Okay, Anders, why don't you go first?
Okay, I mean, as I said, I it's not a bad movie by any means. It's very serviceable. It accomplishes what it's supposed to accomplish, but not in a way that is particularly insightful or groundbreaking. I am going to go with 6.8 out of 10.
Yes! Yes! May the decimals rule.
People. Anders is never coming back to
me. He's coming back for
I'm
every
rounding
podcast.
It up to a 7 by default.
Joe.
I enjoyed this movie an awful lot. I know that that I come from kind of a place that's very specific to me. Well, it may not be one of the most accomplished movies this year, but it really is one of my favorite. I watched it with kind of this giddy enthusiasm, and it built and it built and it built. It had this urgency and a pace that really didn't peter out until, you know, the very end where we had this odd bit that was stuck on. So for me, this was, you know, a movie with a great plot, a great central character, a wonderful final act, total knee stuff. I would give it a 9, but I think that's overly generous, so I'm going to give it an 8.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I want to see it again. And But this time in 3D. But
will there be a sequel?
It was giddily enthusiastic.
It's totally set up for one.
Well, he's also written like 6 books.
I mean, yes. Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole series of them. But honestly, I was giddy in a way that I haven't felt since, you know, the Batman movies. It was so much fun for me.
Wow.
That's great.
I think we saw a different movie. I just couldn't connect with this one emotionally at all. I was just very glad when it came to an end. 5 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
Very average.
Yeah, well,
for me.
We'll be getting the Blu-ray in this house.
I know, I'm worried.
5, 7, and 8.
Yeah. All right. Well,
have we inspired you to watch it?
Yeah, I want to watch it. I wanted to watch it that day as well, the day of the screening. I just couldn't make it. But no, I do want to go see it.
I mean, temper your expectations. This feels like a kid's movie. You know, it feels like young adult. You know, it doesn't have the love themes, which I really like.
It didn't have the kind of romance.
No, but it didn't have the swoony hormonal type stuff in there, which I hate. You know?
Yeah, I'm quite glad they stayed away from that. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I don't want that stuff. This is, but I just loved the character. I think Ender himself was fascinating to me. All right, let's call the podcast a day for now. Is that the right way to say that? MailatMovieWallows.com. Let's call it a day.
There we go.
MailatMovieWallows.com. Do send us your emails. We love getting them. We'll try and address them on the show if we ever can. Twitter.com/MovieWallows, Facebook.com/MovieWallows as well. Are we at 500 fans yet on Facebook?
Nearly.
We're almost there. So if you know people, encourage them. Anders, are you on Facebook?
Face what now?
Like us on Facebook.
I believe I already have. Well, but if I haven't, I will.
Okay. Yeah. And tell all your friends to do so. Facebook.com/MovieWallows as well. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me.
And me, and thanks so much for having me, you guys.
Oh, lovely to have you.
Anytime, anytime.
No decimal scoring.
Yes, every time. We have to equal out. We have to compensate.
I'm going
to
make this a 5-point scale, you guys. All right?
Then I'll go into fractions. A 3 7/23. 7/23.
You all suck.